Hey, good morning. My name is Jeremiah. I'm one of the pastors here at Westbridge, and we're thrilled to have you here with us. Grab your outline. That'll help you follow along with the talk this morning. As you're grabbing that, I want to say hello to those of you in our parent viewing area. Thanks for joining us there. It's a great option if you have small children you prefer to keep with you during the service. I also want to say hello to those of you engaging with us online. Thanks for participating through that platform as well. And then if you'd like to follow along on your smart device, you can use the YouVersion app, the Bible app. Go to the bottom right corner, select more, click on events and search Westbridge Church, and you can find the exact same outline there. Also, speaking of friends, on your way in today, you should have received a catalog for groups, and you'll notice it is one jersey from each of the teams from the NFC North, and then it says, carry one another's burdens. So there you go. No, none of these teams are in the playoffs anymore, so we are carrying one another's burdens. These are groups that are launching in just a couple of weeks. If you have not had a chance to sign up to be a part of a group in the past, I'd encourage you to do that. Now, you can sign up on your connection card, or you can go to the website later on and sign up there as well. Today, we are in week two of a series called Guardrails. Last week, we launched a series called Guardrails, and here's what we discovered together. First, we all use guardrails on a regular basis, but we don't really notice them until we need them. Guardrails are put in place to direct us and to protect us, and we almost never notice them unless we see one that has a dent in it. And then we notice it, right? We find them on bridges, we find them on medians, we find them on curves, just about anywhere that straying off of the path has the potential to cause us harm, there's a guardrail. Now, the second thing we discovered is last week is that all guardrails are always set up in the safety zone. They're never in the danger zone, they're always in the safety zone, and even though it eats up several feet or several yards maybe even of usable space, nobody argues with the logic that we need some margin before we actually hit the danger zone. And third, guardrails are designed to minimize damage. The damage done by hitting a guardrail is way less than the potential damage of flying off of a bridge or going over the median into oncoming traffic, right? And so they are designed to minimize damage. And then finally, we live in a culture that does not encourage or celebrate guardrails. We live in a culture that basically baits us to the edge and then shames us when we go over. And so last week we ended with this question that I think is the most practical question that anybody can ask themselves as it relates to any area of life. It's a question that I read a book about 15 years ago, and for the last 15 years, this has been the dominant question when it comes to decision making in my life. And it's this question: what is the wise thing for me to do? Based on my past experiences, based on my current circumstances, and based on my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for me to do? Not, is it legal? Not, is there anything wrong with it? Not, how close can I get to the edge without going over? But what is the wise thing for me to do? Now, the reason we're talking about guardrails is because all of us have regrets in different areas of our life that probably could have been avoided if we would have had a guardrail in place in that particular area. All of us look back and we go, okay, there are some guardrails that probably could have been avoided if we would have just, there's some regrets that probably could have been avoided if we would have just had some guardrails, which means this, here's the good news. Our future regrets can be avoided if we're honest and put some guardrails in place now to help us from going into areas of our life that could cause us harm. And highways and freeways and parkways are not the only places that we need guardrails. Today we're talking about guardrails in our relationships. So, the year was 1997. I had just graduated high school, and I knew that somewhere along the way, I wanted to do something with working in a church. I didn't know what that was going to look like. I definitely didn't think it would be this. But I just thought, you know, somewhere along the way, I want to work in a church. I don't know what that looks like. And so right out of high school, I had the opportunity to move to Chicago and to work at a church and do an internship. So I took that opportunity, moved to Chicago. I was 17 years old. It's 1997. And one of my first things that we did there that summer, I worked with junior high and high school students. And while I was there, we did a trip to Six Flags Great America. So we were living in Chicago, went up to Six Flags Great America, took about 60 students, only left one behind. I promise, we went back and got her. And while we were there, this is 1997, one of the newest things that was happening at amusement parks around the country was this idea of we're going to put a camera on the first big hill of whatever thrill ride you're on, and we're going to capture that moment when you're flying down the hill. And then we're gonna give it to you at the end of the ride, and you have a chance to purchase that picture. And so this was a new thing. Now, we're all used to that now, and nobody buys them anymore because, you know, we're all snapping selfies on the roller coasters now, right? But here's the deal. This is a new thing, and we thought, this is Six Flags Great America. It's a very family-friendly park. And so they had a lot of rules as it related to modesty. At the time it was no two-piece swimsuits for girls, guys' shirts on at all times. And so we thought, wouldn't it be cool, me and three of my buddies, wouldn't it be cool if on the way up we took our shirts off? And then it would take a picture of us going down, and then we would put our shirts back on before the ride ended. And when you get to the bottom and you see the picture, all it's going to be is four naked guys riding a roller coaster. Wouldn't that just be funny, right? And so we thought this would be hilarious, and we pulled it off on the Screaming Eagle. It's a big wooden roller coaster at Six Flags. Get to the bottom, and rather than, even though we were breaking the rules, rather than the employee who worked there going, oh, guys, you know, you really shouldn't do that, he looked at us, four guys, you know, 17 to about 20 years old, and said, that's awesome. And so we were, that was all the encouragement we needed, right? And so we just kept doing it all day long. In fact, I actually found this original picture this week for you. There you go. You're welcome. That is the Screaming Eagle, circa 1997. And I know you're thinking, like, which one of those is Jeremiah? So we thought we'd just zoom in on it for you, so that you could just get the real full effect. That's right. 1997, baby. It was a good year for me. And listen, there's something rare about this photo, because there's actually something in this photo that has never been seen since. And that is my rib cage. Yeah, it disappeared after that, and it has never been seen since. So it's a pretty rare photo. Yeah. Yeah, those went extinct after that. So here's the reality. I'm not going to sit here today and pretend that this falls into the category of regret for me, because that was awesome, okay? In fact, we kept doing it all day long. By the end of the day, we had 25 guys from the youth group shirtless on one roller coaster ride. Okay, now, we got kicked out of the park, but it was awesome, all right? It was great. I do want you to know that you need some guardrails when it comes to relationships in your life, and here's why. Our friendships determine the direction and quality of our lives. Our friendships determine the direction and quality of our lives. When I look at this picture, it reminds me of how much influence people have in our lives, good or bad. In fact, if you've been around for a while, you know that here as a church, we have a couple of overseers. Outside guys who are pastors of other churches who are help give us accountability and wisdom. A guy named James Grogan, who's spoken here before, and a guy named Dave Nelson, who's spoken here before. And you probably didn't even notice this, but in the back seat of that car with his shirt off was Dave Nelson, one of our overseers for the church. And so we've been friends for over 20 years, and it reminds me our friendships determine the direction and quality of our life. Now, I tell you this story because there is no way one person doing that on their own is a story. It's just weird. If one person was like, I'm going to take off my shirt, and on a roller, you'd be like, no, dude, put your shirt back on. But here's what's interesting. One person would never do that, but the influence of other people causes us to do things we wouldn't otherwise do, good or bad. Because this is true, if we're honest with ourselves, we know this is true. It is our relationships, it is the friendships that we have that determine the direction and the quality of our life. And you and I do things because of the influence of friends far more often than we realize. Relationships play a huge role, not only in who we are at this point in our lives, but in who we are becoming. They play a role in the direction our life is taking. And with that in mind, wisdom would suggest that you have some guardrails when it comes to who you allow to influence you and to what extent you allow them to influence you. Now, I'm talking about friends and associates. These are the people that you go running with, the people you work out with, the people that you go camping with, perhaps even spend holidays with, or even work with. These are the people who are a part of your life on an ongoing basis. And I understand the pushback to this concept. It's kind of like, Jeremiah, it sounds like you're asking us to be judgmental. That's what it sounds like. But the reality is, there's a big difference between being judgmental and using good judgment. Big difference between those things. Judgmental is I make a conclusion, I come to a conclusion about you and who you are and what you're doing. That's being judgmental. Good judgment is I come to a conclusion about myself and about what I'm going to do based on wisdom. There's a big difference between those things. It's actually me making a judgment for myself. In other words, I'm not judging you. I'm not telling you how to live. I'm not telling you what you should believe. I'm not telling you where you should or shouldn't go. You have the freedom to do what you want. And I'm just looking at me. And based on my past experiences, based on my current circumstances, and based on my future hopes and dreams and where I want my life to go, I just can't join you in that activity, in that opportunity, in that invitation. I can't say yes to that invitation. Not because I'm judging you. You're free to do whatever you want to do. But I know where I want my life to head. And I just can't say yes to that opportunity. And if we're honest, we all wish that we had used better judgment when we look back in certain areas of our life, don't we? Particularly as it relates to friendships that we've had. We all have people that we wish we hadn't met, or we wish we hadn't let influence us the way that they did. There's people we wish our kids hadn't met. There's people we wish our spouse hadn't met, hadn't influenced them the way that they have. And the reality is, not because we don't love them, but because of the influence that they had in our lives or in the lives of people that we care about. I heard a story this week from a woman who was telling this story. She said that she's a grown woman now, but she said when she was 13 years old, she was dating a 16-year-old boy, and her parents were freaking out about it. Well, why were they freaking out? Because they knew intuitively what this principle that the people in your life can determine the direction and the quality of your life. And so she's telling a story. So one day she was playing softball. She's 13 years old, playing softball. She was pitching, and her boyfriend is watching her in the stands. And all of a sudden, from behind the concession stand, she sees her mom walk up and go and sit right next to her boyfriend as she's pitching. She said after a couple pitches, her mom got up and left, and the boyfriend followed, and they both disappeared behind the concession stand. And she's telling the story. She said, I knew exactly what was happening. My mom was breaking up for me. She said, I knew it. I'm pitching. I'm watching this happen. Sure enough, her boyfriend comes and sits back down. He's got kind of a sad look on his face. And after the game, she meets up with her mom. And her mom said, hey, I just want you to know, you don't have to worry about that anymore, because you don't have to worry about breaking up with him, because I did it for you. Isn't it amazing? You remember when you were a kid and your parents were so paranoid about who you were hanging out with and where you were going? Why? Because they knew that the friendships in your life determined the direction and quality of your life. And now your kids are growing up, and you've grown up, and now you have kids of your own. And you're paranoid-er. You're more paranoid. The only difference is that now you live in an era in human history where you have a distinct advantage. Because of social media, you can spy on your kids in a way that your parents never could. You can add them as a friend. And it's incredible, isn't it? We know this intuitively. And sometimes we don't apply it to our lives, but we know this if you have kids. You know you are concerned about the people who are influencing the lives of your kids. Why is that such a big deal? Because you know that relationships determine the direction and the quality of your life. This last week, I read an article from a guy named Morin Cerf. He's done a bunch of TED Talks. He's a neuroscientist and professor at Northwestern University. For more than 10 years, he's been studying the relationship between friendships and decision-making. And what he has discovered is that people influencing other people isn't just about behavior. It's actually neurological. something actually happens in your brain. Through their research, they've discovered the brain waves of people who spend time together actually start to look identical. Think about that. It's neurological. Before attitudes, before behavior, there's something that happens on the inside of our brains. When we spend time with other people, our brain waves actually start to sync up and line up. That's incredible to think about. In fact, a couple of statements from the article, he says this: the more we study engagement, we see time and time again that just being next to certain people actually aligns your brain with them. So look at the people that you're sitting next to. Look to your left and your right. Yeah, some of you might want to change seats. You know, I don't know. In fact, think about it. It's already happening right here in this room. You are syncing up with the people around you. I just vibrated the air and disrupted airwaves, and that came into your ears, and your brain translated that and created words. And now you just laughed with people that you've never met before. Think about that. Isn't that crazy? Neurologically. In fact, he says this: if people want to maximize happiness and minimize stress, they should build a life that requires fewer decisions by surrounding themselves with people who embody the traits they prefer. Over time, they'll naturally pick up those desirable attitudes and behaviors. If you just surround yourself with people who are moving in the direction you want your life to move, without any effort on your part, your brain will start to sync up with theirs, and you'll start to move in the same direction. That's incredible. And the flip of that, the flip side is also true. You can pick up negative attitudes and behaviors as well. Your future will be impacted by the people you're in community with. And modern science is actually just confirming what King Solomon wrote 3,000 years ago. He writes this: he who walks with the wise will become wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. If you walk with wise people, you will automatically, with no effort, no intentionality, you don't have to do anything, you don't have to write anything down, you don't have to remember anything, you don't have to study for a test. If you simply surround yourself with people who are wise, you will become wise as well. That's incredible. And remember, wisdom means simply living life like it's all connected. Wisdom means living with the understanding that the decisions I make today affect my future. They affect my reality tomorrow. And so I know that if I make a decision today, it's going to lead somewhere, that it's not static, it's not a decision made in a bubble, but it actually leads somewhere. And so not walking carelessly or thoughtlessly, but understanding, hey, this is a decision that I make today that actually affects my life tomorrow. And so if you surround yourself with people, if you walk with people, if you live with people who live as if life is connected, you naturally start to live your life that way as well. And the comparison of fools, the companion of fools, he says, will suffer harm. Now notice he doesn't say, whoever is walks with the wise will become wise, whoever walks with fools will become foolish. He doesn't say that. He says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but if you walk with fools, you will suffer harm. It's worse than just becoming foolish. He says, if you surround yourself or walk or live with foolish people, in other words, if you live with people who are careless or thoughtless or essentially make decisions in a bubble, and they make a decision today with no concern about how the decision today affects their future or the direction of their life, you will suffer harm as a result of their decisions, even if you don't participate in the things that they're doing. In other words, if you live life with people who behave that way, and what's going to happen is when their life goes bad, so will yours. It's a proximity thing. The closer you are to them, the greater the odds of something happening to you. As they go, you go. Yeah, but I don't do what they do. Solomon says, you're actually going to catch the shrapnel of their bad decisions. Every parent understands this, which is why, as parents, we are so concerned about who our kids are surrounding themselves with. Why is that? Because we understand this principle. Because if we're honest, even if we don't apply it to our lives today, if we're honest with ourselves, we look back at our lives, and we recognize it is the relationships, it is the core relationships that have been a part of our life that have shaped who we have become today. We recognize that that's true. There are certain kids you don't want your kids being influenced by. And it's not because you're concerned that your kids are going to do those things, but because when other kids do what they do, your kids will be harmed by their decisions. And it's not being judgmental. It's simply using good judgment. Doesn't mean you don't love other kids. Doesn't mean that you don't want the best for them, but you don't want them influencing your kids because you understand this principle. Now, here's the other thing. Number two, the thing that makes friendship so incredible is the very same thing that makes it so dangerous. We drop our guard. That's what makes friendship so great, right? I can drop my guard. I can just be myself. And I don't have to worry. And so that's why Solomon warns us to walk with the wise. Because friends who aren't careful with their life won't be careful with your life. And friends who aren't careful with their health won't be concerned about your health. And friends who aren't careful with their marriage won't be careful to try and help you guard your marriage. And friends who aren't careful with their finances won't encourage you to be careful with yours. Friends who don't have any type of faith, any concern for faith, aren't going to be very concerned about your faith. And friends who don't seem to make decisions that take the future into account, the last thing they will worry about is your future. And later on, the Apostle Paul would write these words to followers of Jesus living in Corinth. He says, "Do not be fooled. Bad company corrupts good character. Don't trick yourself," he would say, "into believing something that you know is not true. You know that if you surround yourself with people who don't live wisely, who don't live as if life is connected, and don't live the way that you want to live, you will be pulled in that direction. You know it's true." So today, I want to give you five relational guardrails. Guardrails to help you when it comes to relationships. Now, here's the pushback to all of this. A couple things. One is, okay, are you saying that we shouldn't be friends with people who don't have faith? I am not saying that at all. What I'm saying is the very thing that makes those friendships so powerful is also the very thing that makes them so dangerous. You just have to have some guardrails. You just have to use some wisdom as you navigate those relationships. The second thing is this. What I'm about to share with you, these aren't rules, these are suggestions, okay? You won't find these specifically spelled out in the Bible because it deals with gray area. In fact, I'm going to share these five things with you, and you might even be thinking, that's not even in the Bible, that's just his opinion. Let me just tell you, exactly. This is just my opinion, okay? This is not in the Bible, so let me confirm that right up front. But wisdom always deals in the gray space. So if you want to live with wisdom in 2019, I would suggest that at least give these five relational guardrails some thought. Okay? So the first one is this. If you catch yourself pretending to be someone you're not, if you, at some point in relationships with people, if you find yourself pretending to be someone that you're not, that should light up your conscience. That should kind of ping your conscience to say, what am I doing? When you catch yourself nodding and you're thinking, I don't really believe that. Why am I nodding? That should say something to you. When you feel pressure to be somebody other than who you truly are, that's a red flag. That's a guardrail. No major harm done, but you know, that should wake you up a little bit, like your car grazing the guardrail. Like, that was a little too close for comfort. That should make you rethink or reconsider the nature of that relationship. Because when you find yourself agreeing with things on the outside that you disagree with on the inside, that's a red flag. That's a red flag. This is gonna cause you to become disintegrated from yourself. This is where we get the word disintegration. Disintegration means for things to break apart. And when outwardly you're moving one direction and expressing one thing, and inwardly you think something else, it's actually splitting you apart. You are no longer integrated, you are now disintegrated. It's where we get the word disintegration, it's how things break apart. You're breaking apart on the inside. And so when you live that way, you disintegrate. That's why lying is so destructive. It disintegrates relationships. And when you pretend to be something that you're not, you're lying to yourself, it's destructive to you. And so all I'm saying is this, if you ever find yourself in a relationship and you feel the pressure, and it may not even be pressure from the other person, you may be putting that pressure on yourself, but this should just be a guardrail. If I find myself pretending to be someone I'm not,
I should at least ask the question why. That should be a red flag. Number two, you feel pressure to compromise. Not after you've compromised, that's in the danger zone, but when you feel pressure to compromise, in other words, when something that wasn't even a real temptation to you has suddenly become a live option, that should light up your conscience. That should cause you to wake up and say, why do I feel the pressure to compromise? When you find yourself justifying that invitation or that next one or that opportunity by telling yourself, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, or it's just not that big of a deal, or I'm always the good one, it's not gonna hurt me to have a little fun, that should jar you awake. That should be a signal to you, whoa, I think I'm heading into danger, I need to turn away. Again, not because the Bible says so, I can't give you a specific verse for that, but because wisdom always leads you to safety. Here's another one. When you say, you find yourself saying this, I'll go, but I won't participate. I'll go, but I won't participate. That when you find yourself saying that, let me just ask you this question. Would you ever buy that logic from your 14-year-old daughter? Well, Dad, I mean, I'm gonna go, but I'm not gonna participate. Oh, okay, honey. You want the car keys? Go. You would never buy that from your 14-year-old daughter. You would never buy that logic from your kids, your younger brother or sister, your niece or nephew, your grandkids. And when you start to have that question, or that conversation with yourself, that should just, you should explore that. We would never buy that logic from our kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, younger brothers and sisters. So why would we buy that argument from ourselves? And when you start having that conversation, I'm not saying you shouldn't go, I'm just saying when that conversation starts, it should bother you a little. That should be a guardrail. It should ding your conscience. You just bumped into something, and very little damage has been done yet. But pay attention to that conversation that you're having with yourself because you're close to the edge. Another one is this. Number four, you hope people you care about most don't find out where you've been or who you've been with. Even if you do nothing wrong, even if you don't break any laws, even if you're not in any way unfaithful or do anything to embarrass you or your family, in your heart, in your mind, if you're thinking, I hope the people that I know the most, that know me best and that I love the most and care about the most, I hope that they don't know where I've been or who I've been with, that is the nucleus of a lie. You haven't applied it yet, but if you think you would be tempted to live so they don't know where you are, I'm gonna sneeze. Excuse me. Thank you. If you think you would be tempted to live in such a way that they don't know where you are or who you're with, that should bother you. Not because you've done anything wrong, but because you've established a guardrail there. And if you wouldn't want to have to tell them and you hope they never find out, that should tip you off. If I don't want the people I care about the most to know where I am, then I have no business going. That's just a guardrail. There's no Bible verse for that. You can argue against that. This is my opinion, okay? But I just think wisdom would suggest that we explore this. And number five, when it dawns on you that your core group of friends is not moving in the direction you want your life to go. Now think about this. When it dawns on you, when you think about this and you reflect on this and you realize, man, we love the same music and we love the same sports and we love the same food, we love the same artists, we have so much in common, but man, when I look at the direction that this group is moving in, that's not really where I want my life to be headed. See, wisdom, again, is living like life is connected. And so wise people look ahead and they go, okay, if we continue on this path as a group, the friends who are most influencing me, if we're moving in this direction, 5 years from now, 6 months from now, 10 years from now, where will we end up? And is that somewhere I want to be? And if that's not somewhere I want to be, wisdom would suggest that I figure that out, that I put myself on a path and that I surround myself with some people who have the most influence in my life who are moving me in the direction I want my life to go. Relationships are not static. There's always movement, right? And again, this is just a warning. It's just a guardrail. It's just a wisdom thing. You just have to pay attention to it because ignoring guardrails always leaves you in a ditch. And when you're surrounded by a group of people who you have a lot in common with, you drop your guard. That's natural. It's what makes friendships so great, but it's also what makes them so dangerous. And when it dawns on you, you're not moving in the direction you want your life to go, you need to give that some thought. That should tip you off. When where people are heading is a good indicator of where people are leading you. And we often don't think about our friends leading us anywhere, but the reality is, if we look back in hindsight, we know it's our friendships that ultimately lead us. Just like we are ultimately probably leading some other people who we're friends with. And so you have to ask yourself this question. When it comes to my core group of friends, the people who are most influencing my life, are they moving in the direction I want my life to be headed? Now, here's what's, I know there's pushback to this, okay? I get that. Like, it feels judgmental, but I'm saying use good judgment. Here's the other sort of side of this. You got to remember this. Don't confuse compassion with wisdom. Because here's the pushback to some of this. Well, this doesn't sound very compassionate. It doesn't sound very loving. It doesn't sound very graceful. Compassion will never require you to make an unwise decision about yourself. In fact, you need to keep yourself on this side of the guardrail, because when your friends crash, you're the person they come running to, aren't you? Some of you have already experienced this. You said no to an invitation because you found yourself saying something like, well, I'll go, but I won't participate. Or you found yourself saying, I feel like that's a compromise for where I want my life to be headed. And so you said no to an invitation or an opportunity because it dinged your conscience. And you realized, maybe even not for them, but for me, I'm going to end up in the ditch. Based on my past and my present and where I want to go, I'm going to end up in the ditch. And your friends even kind of ridiculed you, maybe in a joking way. They mocked you for being a prude or being religious or a preacher boy. Maybe, okay, sorry, I had to get that off my chest. A little therapy there for me. Maybe that doesn't apply across the board, okay? But here's the deal. When your friends crash over the edge, who do they reach out to? All the friends who are in the ditch with them, right? No, they call you. They show up at your door. You're the one that they reach out to. And in that moment, you are in a position to show extraordinary compassion and love and grace because you have established a guardrail. You are in a healthy place to actually extend the kind of grace and love and compassion that most makes a difference. So don't bypass the guardrail of wisdom in the name of compassion. You need to keep yourself on this side of the guardrail. It might be the most compassionate thing that you can do for people in your life. Instead, let me give you a couple of final thoughts for wisdom in relationships. Number one, be available. Be available. Every yes is a no to something else. You have the exact same number of hours every single day that every single person in the world has been given. So you have to just determine. It's a matter of priority. Every yes is a no to something. And so you have a limited amount of time. You have to decide what is going to get enough time to influence your life in a certain direction. If you're going to surround yourself with people who are moving in the direction that you want your life to go, then you have to make yourself available for that to happen. That's just the reality. That's one of the reasons that we do this. That's one of the main reasons that we do groups. Here's why. Most of us, while we recognize this principle, I don't think anybody disagrees that friendships play a huge role in who we're becoming. Most of us aren't very good at just carving out that time because life is so busy and we have so many things going on. And it's one of the reasons we do group. We want every single person who calls Westbridge their church home to join a group, to get into a group. And here's why. Your relationships determine the direction and quality of your life. That's the truth. So make yourself available to some people who are moving in the same spiritual direction that you are. And here's what these are. These groups meet for about 8 weeks at a time. Then we'll take probably a week or two off, do another 8 weeks. We usually take the summer off. Then we do another 8 weeks in the fall, another 8 weeks winter, another 8 weeks in the spring. And so you're meeting for 8 weeks at a time. Here's what's not going to happen as a result of joining a group. You will not come out after 8 weeks with a Bible degree. Sorry. If that's what you're in it for, sorry. It's not going to happen. As a matter of fact, there are going to be some people in your group that everybody has different backgrounds. Everybody has different things happening, different stages of life. But the goal is that you would come alongside some people who are moving in the same direction spiritually, that together you would develop some friendships and some relationships with some people who say, look, I want my life to end up here. And you go, that's what I want my life to look like as well. And together you push, pull, prod, encourage, figure out a way to help each other take steps in that direction. to do that, you have to be available. It doesn't happen by accident. And that leads us to number two, be intentional. Be intentional. Community with others doesn't just happen. No one stumbles into meaningful community. You have to be available and you have to be intentional. And so here's the catalog. Groups are launching in a couple of weeks. If you're not currently in a group, I want to challenge you to take that step. And here's the deal. Don't just be part of the crowd here at Westbridge. Jump in and get connected with some people who are moving in the direction you want your life to go. Because that's what wisdom looks like. Walk with the wise and you'll become wise. And here's some of the reservations. I totally get this. Well, what if I get into a group and there are some people in there who are weird? Now, let me just put that to rest for you, okay? You will. And they will be. But really, everybody's weird till you get to know them. Isn't that the truth? And here's what I can say. The overwhelming majority of people at Westbridge are people just like you and me who genuinely want to live the best life possible. And they're just simply looking for some other people to walk alongside them in life. So we've been doing this. My wife and I have been doing groups for over a decade, meeting on a weekly basis with a group of people who we get together, we open the scriptures together, we talk about life, we talk about what's going on in our lives, our kids, our jobs, we pray together. And here's the deal. This isn't about the direct impact it makes in one night. This is about the impact that this makes over a long period of time as you continue to meet, as you continue to be intentional and available, and you show up. And what starts to happen is this is a group of people that you realize they're moving my life in the direction I want my life to go. We have people in our group who are different stages of life, different backgrounds, different faith backgrounds, even listen to different music. There are some people in our group who listen to country even. I don't get it either. And they still show up. So it's amazing. Hebrews 10 says this, the author says this. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. Let us not neglect meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. See, that's our role. As people who are followers of Jesus, he says, look, your job to one another, is to encourage, to pull and push and prod and encourage and somehow link arms and somehow help each other move in the right direction. And the way that you do that is to continue meeting together. Don't give that up. That's one of the best ways to continue to encourage each other and think of ways to motivate one another. The way that we walk together is we meet together and we encourage each other. Now, here's why that's so important. Then we'll close. Tomorrow, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in our community and thousands of people in the northwest suburbs will wake up, they will stumble out of bed and sort of groggily walk into the bathroom, and they'll open their eyes and they'll look in the mirror, and they will see in the mirror the face of a person that they never, ever imagined that they would see. And they will ask themselves this question, how did I get here? Whose life is this? I never thought I would be here. I never thought, how did this happen to me? And the answer to all of those questions is the same answer. Walk with the wise and become wise. It's why you need guardrails. It's why I need guardrails. It's why when we need some internal rules that sort of light up our conscience, not when we're in the danger zone, but before we hit the danger zone. And Jesus said something that was really significant. He was teaching in Luke chapter 7, and we often miss this. He kind of tucks it in at the end of a talk. And he's talking to a group of people, and there are some people who always resist the voice of wisdom and always have a counter argument, and they have an answer for everything. In fact, maybe you're sitting here today and even as I'm listing these five sort of guardrails, you're thinking to yourself, how absolutely overprotective and religious it all sounds. And Jesus was dealing with a group of people who had just had all the answers. And they always had a counterpoint for everything that he said. And he'd say something, they go, yeah, but this. And then he'd say something, yeah, but this. And so at the end of his talk, he just ends it with this phrase. He says, wisdom is shown to be right by the lives of those who follow it. Jesus. As recorded in Luke 7. In other words, time will tell. I know you guys have an argument for everything I'm trying to tell you, but time's going to tell. Wisdom always has the last at bat. Wisdom always has the last word, but because wisdom is not an absolute, you can always find an argument against it. You just can. You can take what we've talked about today. You can take these five guardrails. You can throw them out with yesterday's trash. You're smart enough to come up with an argument for why I'm actually just being silly and overprotective and fear-mongering and judgmental. Because wisdom is not an absolute. Wisdom plays in the gray space. In fact, some of you are smart enough, you could probably come up with a Bible verse for each one of those for why a counter argument based on a scripture verse. But wisdom is shown to be right by the lives of those who follow it. So I would encourage you, establish some guardrails as it relates to the people who are most influencing the direction of your life. You will either be glad that you did, or you'll wish that you had. But if you believe that God is for you and not against you, if you believe that he wants to see you live the best life imaginable, then why not trust what Jesus says about wisdom? And why not begin today? And if you're here in the picture that you have had of God in your mind is not a God who is for you and not against you, I don't know where you got that picture of God, but it's not from Jesus. And if you've never heard this, I want you to hear it. God is for you. He is not against you. And when Jesus came into the world, he said, I have come to give you life to the fullest. And if you're here today and you've never heard that, you need to know you have been invited to be a part of God's family. That's what God wants for you. He's building a family and he wants you to be a part of it. And if you've never said yes to that, you can, right where you sit. You can just say, okay, I want to be a part of your family. And without raising your hand, without standing up, you can just agree with this simple prayer. Jesus, please forgive my sins. Forgive me for those times where I've walked away from you, or maybe I even had in my mind a picture of who you were that it's not really who you are. I had a stereotype or an idea. But if what I'm hearing today is true, if you are for me and not against me, if you've invited me to be a part of your family, then I want to say yes to that. And I pray, adopt me into your family. Make me your son. Make me your daughter. And then help me, not as a precondition to relationship, but because of this new relationship, help me to put my trust in you and to follow your way of living life, trusting that you want me to have the best life possible. Thank you for loving me. In Jesus' name, amen.